Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm proud to bring you Sword and Sandal Cinema. We'll be opening up with a brief legend of Hercules. It is said that in antiquity there was a lost epic of Hercules. Only faint hints of it remain, echoing through the surviving tales. In modern times, Anchor Bay Entertainment has reclaimed this legacy and has preserved Hercules the Legendary Journeys for posterity, conveniently, on DVD. Yes, Virginia, there is a Hercules. In season 4's 15th episode, we learned that not only does Hercules survive into our modern era, but he is in fact pretending to be an actor named Kevin Sorbo. Ares causes an earthquake to distract our hero while the war god endeavors to destroy his popular TV show. This comic tale includes the infamous Chimpules, the mightiest primate sequence. For those of you just joining us, in the 9th episode of season 5, Kevin Sorbo, who is in reality Hercules, the son of Zeus, attempts to keep his identity a secret while protecting his show's writers from Ares, who, disguised as a studio executive, endeavors to destroy them all during her retreat. Several episodes of Xena Warrior Princess transpired in modern times as well. Xena and Gabrielle reincarnated into our era and were also clones. Had either series continued, it would have been interesting to see all three heroes, and okay, maybe Joxer as well, join forces to fight evil in the world we care about the most, our own. And now onward to Michael Del Russi. Greetings and welcome, Michael. How are you?
Good evening. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. It's been a while since we spoke. I've missed you.
I miss you also, and it's always a pleasure to be with the Olympians. And I'm excited to talk about my experience in the Sword and Sandal cinema area, if I can.
Awesome.
I think it was a decade, frankly, when the gods descended to Earth. For me, for my generation, I mean, that's the way we saw it. I mean, for me, we grew up in an era in the beginning, the 50s, as an example. Cowboys were our heroes and everything that came with that. The guns, I remember on one Halloween, my parents surprised us with just a full set, the white hat, blue uniform, the white scarf, the plastic guns. I mean, we really had the whole thing going on.
Uh-huh.
And we were very excited during that era. But then came the Sword and Sandal films, the Peplum films. For me, it was a leap in consciousness with the decade of the 60s and the heroes that came with them. And I think, you know, we were all fascinated with myths even then at that time. But the myths weren't touched upon all that much when we went to school. They were briefly explained, very briefly explored, but there was very little detail there. Whatever we were exposed to, as far as what the myths, the Greek myths specifically, were all about, was through the Sword and Sandal films.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was a tremendous impact in my life. It was a tremendous impact that lasted right through my adult years up until this very day, a major influence. I'm 70 years old, and whatever strength I gained as a person, both creatively and culturally, came from the Sword and Sandal films of the 60s. And it's the heroes and gods and all they meant to me is really unexplainable. The images of warriors and immortals, and it gave you a place in the physical world, world of physical culture. And you began to take an interest in your body, and you wanted to know, can I look like these guys? Can
mm-hmm.
I develop my body like these guys? The classical physiques that were, you know, so admired during the eras of Greece and Rome and the sculptures and everything that went with it, everything we were exposed to. these, at that point, I think these images no longer existed in just our minds. I believe at that point, during that decade, the gods had descended to earth for us. So then it was no more a matter of cowboys and Indians. We were able to look at the stars and look at the galaxies and the astrological images, if you will, and these things all started to become real to us. So sometimes what was once otherworldly, we began to aspire to. And all of that, for me, was due to the decade of the sword and sandal era and how the gods and the images, and we learned Greek mythology, not in school. I didn't learn much about Greek mythology in school. I learned it through the sword and sandal films. And it was only later after that I began to read Homer and the Odyssey and tried to take that education further. So for me, both internally, culturally, and to get me through life, the sword and sandal films were, even today as I speak, the ultimate experience during the decade of the 60s specifically.
I agree. I'm 63. I'll be 64 in less than half a year. And I grew up at the tail end of the era preceding sword and sandal. My birth was during the birth of sword and sandal in our culture. So it came in with me. And in my early years, were saturated with sword and sandal cinema on television mostly. And it supported what I was learning in school. I went to Greek parochial school, so I learned the myths in school for years. So this was kind of like an expanded and more modern retelling of the myths. And it had a very powerful impact on me as well. And like you, it determined the course of my life. It had a very phenomenally strong formative influence on me.
Well, it's exciting to hear that. And I think these films were both a visual display of the challenges of our mortal existence, which we experience right until this day, but also in many ways a chance to escape from it. So in one breath, our creative imaginations, the internal pictures that we held on to so desperately when we were young, were coming alive. And secondly, we were able to escape the challenges even in school, peer pressure. And I know for me, and it the sword and sandal images, the heroes, became a reality. And moving forward, it led me into the world of physical culture, specifically the magazines we used to pick up and anxiously, excitedly, every month, the Joe Weider publications and the early bodybuilders of that time, Clarence Ross, Leo Roberts. I know some of the names I'm mentioning, the generation of the 80s is fully unaware of. These guys were not depicted in the sword and sandal films per se, but they came along with it in terms of the influences that I was exposed to. So between the early bodybuilders, which the sword and sandal films led me to, everything, and they were the guiding force. The sword and sandal films were the guiding force for everything that was to come afterwards. And I can still remember my first set of barbells that I purchased. I was so excited. And then on the weekends, we were even more excited when we discovered the Sons of Hercules series, something, frankly, that I never thought would happen. The films were one thing. But then to have a weekly series was just, we were just over the top with excitement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was a very interesting concept too. They found a thematic way of joining the movies together because they weren't all Sons of Hercules. In one of them, it was even Hercules himself who was in the movie, where he teams up with Ulysses. And one of the Sons of Hercules was a caveman. So they hopped around the history. So they had it that these people were sons of Hercules, either genetically or in spirit. So that worked really well. That was a good explanation.
You know, after a while, I mean, being exposed to these heroes, these gods, that's what we I think we that's what after once we were exposed to it, that's what we truly wanted to be, without
mm-hmm.
the cowboy hats, the six shooters, but rather with our own physical prowess. And once we discovered that, paralleling the world of bodybuilding at the time, which was still pretty much in its infancy, it connected us to I think a greater source of awareness that we could actually change our bodies through physical exercise. So one definitely went hand in hand with the other. We got to see these heroes and these gods perform their miracles on the small, both the big and small screen. And
yes.
then we had the opportunity through early bodybuilding to say, hey, we might be able to be part of this, to actually transform our physical structure. It was almost otherworldly. Even now, as I think about it, how it affected me both as a person, as terms of virtue and building integrity and building strength, and in terms of the source of creativity. So for me, these films were, up until today, unparalleled. We know that they played around with history a little bit. They changed things around a little bit, but we didn't care. You know, we didn't care. When we were watching Hercules and Hercules Unchained and some of my favorites at that time, even now, with Fury of Hercules, Brad Harris, Goliath against the Giants, I thought it had just a little bit of everything to spark and fire the imagination. And I think another one of my favorites was the Mole Men against the Son of Hercules.
Yes.
And I think for me, when I hear these other individuals and that were much younger than me, when they talk about the bodybuilding movement of the 80s, and we know that during the 80s, there was a renaissance, a second renaissance almost, I think, in terms of physical culture. But behind all of that, before Gladiator, before the new peplum, if you will, these films were the inspiration. Even younger people, growing up in the 80s, the generation of the 80s, began to want to know about them. They didn't know about them the way we did because we grew up with them. But these films were a cultural phenomenon, and in my opinion, continue to be. Because as these young people grow older, I think they're going to look back at some of these early heroes and early films, and I think that will be the motivational factor. Because I don't think that the excitement of those films, the creativity of them, they haven't been duplicated yet, in my opinion. And I frankly don't think that era ever will be.
And no, they haven't been duplicated. Some of the new films are good, but they don't have the spirit of the old films. The old films, though, they were made by different people and there were different quality in the films. Mm. The genre as a whole seems very interconnected. Now you have like a bunch of individual movies that don't really seem connected in any way at all.
Exactly. And I just, the same feeling, the feeling that we had then, for me personally, is lacking. I think even the films that were pretty much low budget, I still feel the swordplay, some of it was excellent. I mean, the acrobatics and some of the things they did, they looked very real, very authentic, even in the lower budget films. And today, unfortunately, and I'm sorry, but I'm a stickler for this, even those with the superior bodies, there's so much computer graphics going on and polishing up of the images that you're not experiencing the same feeling. You're not somehow,
right.
You're not connecting with them. And I've tried. I saw the both new versions of Hercules with the other version, which I forget who even played that role. Do you remember who played in the other version a few years ago, who played the lead character?
The most memorable. There were a few people. There was Paul Telfer, I think, played one version. On TV, then there was the Legend of Hercules. I forget who played Hercules in that one. There was a an adult Hercules film made. I haven't seen that one, but I read about it. They come out with Hercules films fairly often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw both. I saw both films that you mentioned, and I have to tell you, I think they played fast and loose with history anyway. I couldn't get it. I couldn't follow it, especially not the one with the rock so much, but the other one that you mentioned. I couldn't even follow the plot. It was totally alien to me. They abandoned the history completely, if I'm correct. You know, I just couldn't follow it. But, you know, Joseph E. Levine, when he took the advice of the Roman filmmaker at that time, I think he was based in Rome, his little girl had gone to see a film and a stage performance. And it would go, you might know this better than me. And she saw Steve Reeves. And she went back and convinced her that this was really something special. I think he bought the film rights for, I think it was $120,000. And from then on, history was made. Joseph E. Levine had a tremendous talent for publicity, and he pulled out all the stops. You know, when it came to erecting giant mannequins and cardboard posters and, you know, he left no stone unturned, and he was the catalyst. He was the catalyst that brought it all to a reality in terms of the American audiences. The film was.
He ushered in the whole peplum era as much as Steve Reeves did. Unfortunately, it was his greed that almost killed it. Steve Reeves was supposed to be in the third Hercules movie with Levine. And also Levine had the television series planned. There would be the continuing adventures of Hercules after the first two films. And we got one episode, Hercules and the Princess of Troy. That was supposed to be with Steve Reeves too, but Levine kept trying to minimize the amount of money that Steve Reeves would get paid. So Reeves did not go along with these new ventures.
I did not know that. That's interesting. You know,
we've had George Helmer on a few times, and he shared those stories.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was another film. Somebody took the first two Steve Reeves Hercules movies and edited them together and then redubbed them. It was supposed to be a comedy. I haven't seen that one either. And then somebody redid it more recently, and I haven't seen that one either.
And wasn't there a Reg Park film where they kind of different yes. parts? I think it was Hercules the Avenger. Am I right?
Something like that, yes. And they took the other films that he made and spliced them all together and made a new Hercules movie.
I remember my mom taking us to see, because we were so enamored with the whole genre. And I remember my mom taking us to see Hercules and the Captive Women. I saw that on the big screen. The original Hercules and Hercules Unchained. We saw all of these in downtown Newark when you had some of those big film, movie theaters down there. RKO, I think the Capitol was another one. And then we went to see, and I loved it, Duel of the Titans, the Steve Reeves and Gordon Scott.
Yes.
Was a rewarding experience. I thought that film was done pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, they're all great, and they all seem to take place in the same world. Because they were ultra-realistic and they shot on location, so they did have a lot of the ruins incorporated into their story. And this was before the day of the steroid bodybuilder taking prominence. I mean, Red Park was the biggest Hercules around, and he was natural. So the people had realistic bodies too, you know, that if you worked out and you kept at it, you could look like that too, like you pointed out before. So
and, yeah,
I think that's what tied the films together. The fact that they used relocations, they used people who look like regular humans, albeit stronger. Just again, the spirit of the thing, regardless how good or how badly they were written, they fit together like a puzzle. You can see one story going into another story.
Absolutely. Look, I think these films during that decade, they are what cultivated the hero within. And at the same time, they fired our imaginations like nothing else. You know, science fiction was there, still pretty much in its infancy, more or less. But these heroes, I don't think anyone, I remember going to high school, even my peers who weren't really into bodybuilding or training the way we were, they could come to school on a Monday morning or what have you, and they would all be talking about these films. Mm-hmm. You could see Hercules over the weekend. So my recollection is there was pretty much no one in terms of my school companions that weren't affected and touched in a positive way by these films. It fired their imaginations. And as I said, even though they may not have moved into the physical culture area, it enlivened their spirits, enlivened their imaginations like nothing else. They wanted to know more about it. And the schools I went to, elementary schools, as I said, didn't touch much on the myths. When they did, we were all fascinated. I remember opening up the history books, and there would be this black and white art of Hercules and Ulysses and pen and ink. You can see the artwork was done in pen and ink in those old, I don't know if you remember this, those old history books. And
yeah.
That was fascinating too in itself. They're very well done, by the way, in most cases. But, you know, it was never enough. They didn't touch it enough, and it's such a great part of our human development and our consciousness. It should have been emphasized more. The myths should have been discussed more during that spectacular era. But only the sword and sandal films were capable of giving that to us at that point in time.
I've tried to keep it alive through some of the things I do. I run educational programs for kids, and one of them is based on mythology. So mm-hmm. I'm inspired by all those old movies. So I make the adventure, the interactive storytelling, like the mythology in the sword and sandal films. So mm-hmm. when we had a storm in Pennsylvania, some guy came in with his wife and kids, and he was one of the kids that played in the role-playing game. So he sailed with Jason the Argonauts, and the way he spoke of it with such fondness, you could see that it really left a lifelong impression on him. That he went, you know, on the voyage with Jason, and you know, they went to find the Golden Fleece. And the entire voyage took around 2 years to do. We're meeting with the kids weekly. So they got to experience the whole story as filtered through the 50s movies for the most part. So
that's terrific.
I enjoy doing that, and I'm still doing it after all these years.
Wonderful. That's wonderful. One of the great films of that era, certainly. Jason and the Argonauts. What was the name of, and I know you mentioned him, what was the name of the actor who played Hercules again? I know you did some pieces on him.
Yeah, Nigel Green. Yeah, he's amazing because he didn't have a bodybuilder's physique, but on attitude and acting alone, he pulled it off really, really well. You could believe that he was Hercules, even though he didn't look like Steve Reeves or Rich Park or Gordon Mitchell. Yeah, he definitely had the attitude for it.
Right. Exactly. The personality came through.
Yes.
You know, the personality definitely came through with him. At first, when we saw him, I was a little disappointed. You know, you were expecting to see a Steve Reeves type physique. But as you pointed out, rightfully so, it was the image that he portrayed. His personality came through, and he took the part of Hercules and made it glow, actually, in that film. So I thought he did a terrific job, and I was thinking of him the other day, but couldn't recall his name.
Yeah, they all had something. Like, I'm one of the people who likes Sergio Chiani, or Alan Steele, who's known. I'm a big fan of his, because he brought like a joy of living to the role of Hercules. Steve Reeves' role, his wonderful qualities, was a little bit wooden in how he played the part. He was a little bit rigid and stiff. Reg Park, he had like the attitude, I'm the strongest man in the world. I could take a nap in the middle of a battle,
yeah,
you know, right before an adventure. And it was okay. So he had that attitude. But Sergio Chiani, a.k.a. Alan Steele, had the joy of life. And it showed he was really into playing his parts. And he did it not only seriously, but comedically in Samson's Mighty Challenge and its reissue, Hercules Returns. You know, you could tell that he really enjoyed doing what he was doing.
Yeah, even when he played a bad guy, which was at least, I think, half the time, I liked him in The Rebel Gladiator with Dan Vodden. Did you see that one?
Yes, long ago.
He played a pretty bad guy, bad Roman. I forget what the part specifically played or if there was a historical connection to it. But he was great. And you make a good point. No matter what role he was depicting, there was a liveliness there.
Yes.
There was a liveliness in whatever in his acting. You know, it was electric in some ways.
That is very true. And I think I've shared this story like a million times, but I was trying to track him down to interview him on the show, or at least to thank him for keeping me entertained for much of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody in one of the Sword and Sandal groups, before we had our own Sword and Sandal groups, I believe it was in Peplum Paradise, somebody knew him and offered to give me his contact information. So I was going through that process, and I was looking forward to getting the contact information. And then the news came out that he died within like a few days of my receiving this offer. So I never got to thank him personally. So that's why I created the group on Facebook. There's over 1,500 people in it, maybe even more than that. I haven't really looked at the numbers recently. But there's a lot of Sergio Chiani fans out there.
And was he living in the States at the time?
I think he was living in Europe.
Okay.
It's like Samson Burke is still alive, but nobody seems to know how to contact him. I found his old website, and I tried following through on the contact information, but nobody got back to me, and one of them bounced, so the account's no longer active. But there are a handful of them that are still around. I made tributes to them on Facebook also. But I haven't been able to track any of them down yet. I got to speak to Mark Forrest a number of times before he passed on. So that was very interesting. Very interesting, a Renaissance type person.
Yes, he was. He was a painter or something, was he not?
He was a dancer. He was a singer. He did all sorts of stuff. He was a very artistic person. And I looked at the time. Wow, we have like a minute to go. Michael, thank you for being here. I always enjoy our conversations. You have a great spirit, too, that shines through everything you say and do. How can people get in contact with you?
They can write to me at Michael Del Rossi, Post Office Box 129. Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006. And I'll be glad to come. I have a prayer system going, and I have a wellness program. And
you have an awesome ministry, and I wish you the greatest success with it. And when the weather gets warmer, I'd like to get together.
I would love that. And say goodnight to all of the Olympians. It's such a pleasure to be with you.
Same here, Michael. Have a wonderful evening, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
And now before we go to the next segment with Setna of Kemet, I have another legend of Hercules. As Zeus and Marduk vie for supremacy in the starry heavens, Zeus's half-mortal son wishes to explore what it is to be human. Zeus, of course, forbids it. But alas, for this young demigod, the call of destiny is more powerful than his father's thunderous voice. Aided by Hera, he arrives in modern-day California and befriends Curtis, a wisecracking local. Cultures clash until common ground is found. In the meanwhile, Hera convinces Zeus to deprive Hercules of his powers and conspires with Marduk to humiliate and destroy her hated stepchild. Hercules ultimately finds, after many misadventures, that one need not be half god to stand triumphant against life's many challenges. One simply needs sufficient heart. Terry Hulk Hogan and his family appear throughout this fun family film. For those who want a fun to continue past the movie, here's an FYI. Season 2 of the reality show, Hogan Knows Best, contains an episode that takes you behind the scenes of this empowering production. And yes, the film can also be viewed in 3D. And now onward to Michael Del Ruski, known to us here as Setna of Kemet. Greetings and welcome, Setna. How are you?
I think you mean Michael Waterman.
What did I say?
Michael Del Ruski?
Oh, I'm sorry. Michael Del Ruski was just on. I was talking to him. I am sorry. Michael K. Waterman, better known as Setna of Kemet.
Yes, but I'm still me.
And you
watched, oh,
you actually watched this movie, which
is
great.
I watched it the other night. I laughed. I learned. I thought it was very interesting. You were right. Hera in this movie is not an angel. Very often she's viewed on as not liking Hercules at all. In the old God forbid us, the old Kevin Sorbo series, Hera was a complete monster, and she completely hated Hercules and Heracles, which is, you know, her name is in there, and she kind of did everything in her power to kill him. In this one, she just played. Go ahead, Hercules. I mean, you ought to know that.
There are different versions of the myth. Even if you just stick with the Greek, there are so many different versions. And if you go to the Italian and the Etruscan and the ancient Near Eastern versions, there's a lot of different stories. Even Disney, that a lot of people complained about its inaccuracy. The Etruscans had Hera's, Hercules' beloved mother. He was named after her. And he was never left on Earth. He was raised on Olympus. And he married Athena, and Mars, or Ares, was their son, and he wasn't an evil either. So,
well, in the old Steve Reeves movies, he married a girl named Iole, and in Kevin Sorbo's Hercules, Iole became Iolus, his companion.
There was an Aeolus, who was his nephew in the Greek myths, and there was a captive that he had of Iole, who came later on, and she was actually indirectly responsible for his death. His wife at the time, Deianira, got jealous because he brought Iole back from one of his expeditions, and she gave him a shirt to wear for the ceremony, and it had Nessus's blood, which had been spiked by hydrovenom. And it ate away at his body, and he had to burn himself to survive. All of these myths, by the way, are tied into rituals and rites around the area that few people know about. Every single thing in Hercules' life is explained if you look at obscure myths and legends that are not Greek.
Now, back to the movie. I thought it was hysterical. Terry Hulk Hogan was wonderful. And I did mention to you a couple of days ago, Hulk Hogan and I both share September the 12th.
Yes,
that's his
birthday.
Also, I met him in 1985 at a restaurant called Victoria Station. They were a chain. And this one happened to be in Stamford, Connecticut. And my friends and I were celebrating. And I guess we saw them. And he came, he saw that you were bringing me birthday cake and that the audience, the waiters and waitresses were coming around. And he goes, "Hello, I'm Hulk Hogan." I'm like, no kidding, in my head. This is my birthday, too. And he introduced me to, then he was married to his wife and he had his kids, his girls with him. And they were very nice. It was a lot of fun. He made my birthday that night. He really did. He tore his shirt off, of course, because he's always known to do that. And it was a lot of fun. We took a lot of pictures. He ate half my birthday cake, I will say. And we got him a pitcher of beer. for his table. And they all had a good old time. And then we went back to eating and drinking and laughing and having a good time ourselves. I spent 7 months living in Stamford, in Stratford, Connecticut. And then I moved to Stamford. But anyway, I moved that way because I got to meet the Hulk. He almost crushed my hand. He's huge. You don't know how big the man is, so you're with him. What is he, like 6'5"?
Something like that, yes. That's what I heard.
Huge. And I'm barely 5'8 these days. I was 5'9 and a half, but I shrunk. But it was kind of awesome to see this huge guy. His wife was a beautiful girl. I hope that was his wife anyway. And it was a wonderful evening. I was looking at this movie, and I thought, why the heck did they stick Marduk in the movie? You know, here's this ancient Assyrian, Babylonian god who suddenly shows up, and, he decides that all the gods and goddesses should live where he lives, not Mount Olympus. And I didn't understand where that came from. You know, how did he even get in there? And, you know, he says, well, Zeus and I are equal. And Zeus didn't deny or argue with him, which I thought was weird. I was waiting for people like Odin and, I don't know, Osiris and the Chinese emperor to show up. And they could all have a WWE brawl up in Mount Olympus. It was very funny that way. And, you know, little Hercules seemed to think, well, okay, I've had enough of this. I want to see what the other half of me is like, the mortal side. And as you say, he was aided by Hera, and they end up in Los Angeles, in Hollywood. And, you know, he's got that kid on the surfboard, skateboard.
Skateboard.
Well, after all, a skateboard comes from a surfboard. You know
That's right, it does, yes.
It was a surfboard on wheels originally. But anyway, it was an interesting film that way because we brought in the, you know, modern culture mixed with the ancient culture. And he was showing off how great and how talented, wonderful an athlete Hercules is, even when he wasn't using his powers. And that was cool. I mean, everyone knew Hercules could pull up trees, you know, push boats. If you watched Jason and the Argonauts push a huge boat into the water, you know, and a thousand other ways that Hercules, all these years fighting hydras, fighting lions, huge lions, giants, Cerberus, all the ancient creatures, Hercules slew them all or brought them all to bear. So that was kind of cool. But to watch him as a kid, having, you know, learning about mortal life, learning about good, bad, and what have you, was interesting to me. You know, I liked it. I thought it was kind of cool. I saw, you know, Zeus, no matter what you do, no matter what you watch, Zeus, unless he's seducing some maiden, always has a huff and puff personality. He's always a grouch. You know, almost every movie you meet, Zeus is grouchy. The new Jason and the Argonauts, which was, 10 years ago or so or more?
Yes.
Okay. And he's
Brian
carrying
Thompson,
on there, too. Right, right. And Zeus was played by the guy who also played Robert the Bruce, another warrior king. So that was kind of – but Zeus is always brooding and complaining and carrying on. And Hera, in that movie and in this one, was scheming. You know, what can she do? Anything she could do to upset Zeus one way or the other. And that seems to be always the theme with her. They have some marriage, don't they? Oh, God.
Well, the Greeks were into irony. So they had, you know, the king of heaven is a philanderer and his wife the goddess of marriage, you know, is cheated on. And they had Ares, who's the warrior, be a coward. Homer, even in Homer. So in a lot of the stories, they play those contrasts. And the Greeks, of course, invented drama and comedy. So,
oh, boy, did they.
They tended to look at things in that way. But again, there are different versions of Zeus. Marduk is a very Zeus-like figure in that he's also in some aspects a thunder god. So I think
right.
That's where they got that non-existent rivalry from.
I didn't like how he looked. That's not how Marduk is known to look. Like Zeus, Marduk has a long flowing beard and long, long hair, and quite often can appear also as a man with the head of a chicken or a cock. Right. So, I mean, you know, he's not, he wasn't chicken livered and he wasn't chicken headed. And he, you know, he just seemed to be like a villain. That was what they made him to look like, a jealous villain. I think forcing Hercules, young Hercules, to not use his powers or not have his powers. And, you know, the kid won all those events anyway. And then the Lord Zeus felt sorry for him, and he did win that long marathon race. And, you know, that was kind of interesting. He took his son's side finally. But Hercules still wanted to remain on Earth and come back and forth once in a while. And I think that's true in a lot of the myths, too, that Hercules knew that he was half mortal. His mother was mortal, after all. And that he enjoyed the divine realm, but became mortal, wanted to be more mortal because he had many wives after a while. And you say that he married the goddess Athena. And that's amazing.
In the Etruscan, I put up an image every now and then. There are images in Etruscan art and in Greek art too, but they're never explained. They have one where Hercules is sitting in a chair and Athena has her helmet off and she's asking if he wants, a drink because she's holding an amphora. And he has like a goblet and he's like waving his arm like, no, you know. So it's a scene of relaxation and intimacy. There's also a scene on a mirror where they're, you know, obviously intimate, and Mars is their little boy. And that's all on the mirror, and they're with attendant gods and goddesses. And in Neo-Theosophy, Hercules and Athena are now the gods of our universe.
Kind of makes sense to me. I mean, Athena, in a lot of ways, Athena, the goddess, is like the ancient god Thoth or Tehute in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
She's the goddess of wisdom. He's the god of wisdom. You know, Egypt always has contradictions with everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, the Romans and all the Greeks were known to stomp the Greeks with their feet and make bread with their hands. And in Egypt, they were kneading the dough with their feet and crushing the grapes with their hands. Go figure. You know, everything backwards, because the Nile, as you know, flows up, not down,
right.
Which is a strange thing, too. But that must mean that Africa, in a certain way, must be lopsided. You know, it must. For the Nile to flow up, the top of Africa, well, I'm going to say where the Mediterranean is, be lower than where Victoria Falls in Kenya, I think it is, where that is. So the height of the mountains there can push the Nile all the way upstream rather than downstream. It's the only river in the whole world that does that, you know. So I like the idea that Hercules stuck up for that little kid, the underdog, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
I like that he was kind to the young girls, and I like that he taught the bullies a lesson. That was something that Hercules, even in Greek mythology, would have done. He didn't put up with bad behavior, and I always liked that. I mean, he was a mischievous, like his father, he could be mischievous too, but I saw him as kind and beneficent, and like you said, the arbiter of what's going on right now in my culture, in Egyptian culture, that's Horus. So I equate
yes.
Horus to Hercules. Very much so. Oh, yes. Very much so. Athena, in that way, I would equate to Hathor at Heru, which means the house of Horus. So, that's kind of cool. How did you like the fact that he was hanging out with Robin Givens, who I actually know very well. She's a beautiful, beautiful girl. Yes, I do.
When I worked for Georgette Klinger, I often worked with her. She was very pleasant.
That is great.
I got her through the debacle marriage of Mike Tyson. Robin was a bit, how shall I say, greedy in the divorce. Mike was violently unfaithful to her and stupid in a certain way because Mike did not read the divorce. He didn't have a prenup, and Robin took him for a lot. And Mike suffered. But she was tired of him always fooling around. Whenever he was fighting, what she explained to me was, whenever he was in a bout somewhere, the press and his, you know, entourage always brought beautiful girls to him. And Robin Givens is a beautiful, beautiful woman. And I didn't understand how he would do that to his wife. And she didn't either. I don't know how long they were married. I think a year or two. And then she finally had enough. And she just walked out of the marriage. But she walked out with bundles of money in her hands. You know, her career was just starting. And Mike basically, in a certain way, financed it because she was able to do more modeling, more acting. She got better parts because of the fact that she was divorced from him. And people looked at her as smart to get away from him and his silliness. So, you know, and in this movie, I think she shows a kind, loving side, and she's a caring mom.
Yeah, I saw the movie a while ago. I wrote the review a while ago, too. But I remember very well. It was an enjoyable, fun movie, like you said. I still have a copy in 3D, in fact. It came with 3D glasses. So I have watched
it as well. I have 3D. We should watch that together sometime. I have 3D glasses somewhere in the house.
Right.
What was I watching in 3D? Oh, yeah, Beowulf. He's kind of a Hercules character, too.
Yeah, yes, he is.
Yeah, I mean, he kills that horrible Grendel.
Grendel, yeah.
Seduces and kills his mother. That's kind of the Morrigan, but it isn't really. I don't think that translated well from Old English. But she's some kind of a demon. And he, you know, he removes her from the world. She's a snake demon. Part snake, maybe dragon, and a woman when she felt like it. Grendel, on the other hand, big, ugly monster. He's kind of like, I guess, what happened to some of the Titans when some of them turned into big, giant trolls. Isn't that true? Weird, misshapen creatures when they lost the war.
The
Gigantomachy? Yeah, when Zeus fought with the Titans and they lost. A lot of them were turned into these giant mountainous trolls.
Yeah, they were all assigned punishments, except some
right,
of them joined
exactly.
the Olympians.
Well, yeah. Hecate certainly did.
That's the next adventure I'm having for the kids. The next big adventure, which is starting after we finish the quest for the Golden Fleece. It should be finished by the end of the year. The next one is the war with the giants.
So Clash of the Titans, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's a good movie. I didn't like the second movie. I didn't like the newer one. It was more faithful to the mythologies, but I liked the other one with Harry Hamlin and, of course, the artistry of our dear Ray Harryhausen.
Yes.
I met
Harryhausen. And
he
was on my TV show, too. It's on YouTube, actually. Somebody put it on YouTube.
Did he bring with him the Medusa? Or the one-eyed ogre. I love the ogre. I think he's amazing.
No, we were sitting with him chatting in chairs. Debbie Dee was on the show at the time, the Scream Queen Debbie Dee.
Oh, yeah,
and,
sure.
So she was on my show at the time. This is before Athena and I hooked up. And Debbie Dee was a barbarian queen. And we were having these adventures, and Ray Harryhausen was on them. And he was talking about his career. And I got to thank him personally for entertaining me, and I asked him what lessons he learned. And I remember it struck me, he said that if he had it to do all over again, he'd learn how to manage money better. And that's something many people in our culture wish for.
Believe me, I wish I could too. I understand, you know, it's not always easy these days with the economy the way it is. I'm not struggling, but I'd like to be better off than I am, of course.
Of course.
I guess everybody does. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't have a cuff out there with apples, but it's, you know, it gets rough sometimes. I work many, many long hours. And then I go home, and sometimes I'm lucky enough to go on a show with you. And then I feel that makes my life better. You've made my life. I'm going to say it. You've made my life better. You've made a huge difference in how I feel about myself and what I feel like my goals are in life. You've crystallized that. And I have to thank you for that, Hercules.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you for your kind words, and you mean a lot to me as well. I'm enjoying our adventures together, and we've shared dreams, and our dreams overlap to some extent in some of the things that we want to do.
Oh, yes.
Looking forward to adventuring with you on that for a long time to come.
Well, you put on your lion skin, and I'll stick on my pharaoh's helmet,
and we'll go
on the barge. We'll take Centauri with us. We'll put him in his druid costume, and off we fly. And we'll take it on. Or I'll put on one of my Merlin costumes. People think I look like a cross between Dumbledore and Merlin. I don't mind that at all.
But you do.
You do.
Those pictures. And you look very regal in your Egyptian finery.
Everybody loves it. It's true. I found a pharaoh's collar on Etsy. I'm addicted to Etsy. It's a terrible thing. But they have a great collar that I want and a pharaoh's crown. But I'm more of a wizard than I am a pharaoh. I'm more of a magician, a high priest than I am a pharaoh. I don't want to rule Egypt that way. I want to work with Egypt on a spiritual level, on a magical level.
Uh-huh.
You know, that the pharaonic Egypt is gone. It's all in ruins. But what we're doing is keeping the spiritual and the sacred Egypt alive. And you're taking that with Greece. And Centauri's doing that with the druids and all the other magical energies he's doing. So those are wonderful things. And I have the backing of the New York pagans here and some of the New Jersey pagans and my Long Island pagans. They're all loving what we're doing. They really are. They're listening. Hi, guys. They're all listening in. And they love the show. So we're doing something right there, Hercules.
There you go. And thanks for listening, guys. I greatly appreciate it. You're invited to come on as guests, if you'd like, and share the magic of your own universes.
I would like that very much myself. You know, it's a journey, and sometimes it's a lonely journey, and sometimes it's a crowded journey. It depends on where you are in time. And I guess what's going on in the world? We're getting ready now for Yule. Everybody's going on and on about Christmas. Well, Yule, as you know, is a whole lot older. And we are getting, it's the winter solstice, which is celebrated all over the world by all the different ancient cultures. The Mexicans, the Peruvians have the hitching post of the sun. In Egypt, the temple of Abu Simbel Ramesses II, that day, sunlight hits the back of the temple, and the gods and goddesses that are on the wall in the back of that temple are brought to life. And as you know, Stonehenge also, there'll be about 400 or 500 druids bringing down the energy at the moment that the solstice occurs. I think that's glorious.
Yes, glorious indeed.
So in the end of the movie, everybody, Marduk is defeated, which I kind of, you know, they're friends, but they're, you know, he's like, he disappears. He explodes, basically, just poofs away. And his hero loses because Hercules has amazing superpowers. He runs circles literally around the kid. And everybody in the high school was going berserk, and they're like, yay, Hercules. And, you know, he understands companionship and camaraderie and, you know, taking one for the team. And I think, you know, he sees that. I don't think he learned that in Olympus because he was alone. And he did the one thing he asked for that he didn't have in Olympus, friends. And he said that was the one thing he really, really loved about being in California. And
yeah,
that was amazing.
It was a fun movie, and it's available online through Amazon, I believe, for free.
Well, I got it
on YouTube.
Yeah.
That's right.
And that movie I'm watching tonight, The Cat Creature, which is positively terrible, it was an ABC or NBC, like, you know, Halloween horror special. Meredith Baxter, who is later known for Bridget Loves Bernie, is playing an ancient Egyptian high priestess who is a evil priestess of Bast. Everybody knows Bast is a beloved, sweet, adorable, wonderful cat goddess who's about family and children who can't, and animals that can't speak for themselves. The song Bless the Beast and the Children, some of that comes from records in the temple of Bubastis. In this world, they have no choice, they have no voice, and she is that kind of a goddess. She takes them to her bosom, to her heart, and she, when we do, I do ritual child namings, like a Christian christening, we use Bast as the mother goddess to come and bless the children. And also, I do every year on May 7th, I bless cats and dogs and whatever.
Cool.
Somebody brought a goat once. I hope it didn't end up as, you know, Gyro eventually. But
yeah,
who knows?
The Greeks.
You know.
We're going to have to wrap up because we have 2 minutes left, and I'd love for you to share your contact information. And you are the phone wizard in addition to your many titles, so I want you to share with people how they can access you there.
They can get me on Facebook at Phone a Wizard. You can also get me at Michael K. Waterman Makeup and Artistry on Facebook, or Michael K. Waterman. I'm also on Instagram and on you. Well, with you, I'm on YouTube. You can get me at Michael K, MK Waterman at iCloud.com. My phone number, which is in my contact, is 516-650-3691. And I'm there on Facebook every day. You can contact me. I am going to be teaching class. I am teaching classes now on Zoom. I'll be teaching classes with Hercules and our other friend Centauri. We are going to be working on an amazing new journey, and I would love you all to come with us.
Yes, you're all invited, and we're working on the structures of it now and the scheduling, but stay tuned for that. Two new minor episodes of Legends of Hercules started today, where I'll be focusing on Hercules in the modern day. And the next episode will be Arnold Schwarzenegger's Hercules in New York, or Hercules Goes Bananas, as it was once called.
Oh, that's
so
cute. I love it.
Thank you very much, Michael. The other Michael's still there. So thank you very much, Michael. Thanks to all our listeners. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Now go out and watch some old movies. Take care, everybody.
Good night, Hercules. Good night, everybody. God bless
you. Good night.
God and Goddess bless you all.
Thank you.